So I will talk about a topic which has a title on the non-extendibility of quantum theory. And I hope this doesn't now infer with what you just said, that we should go beyond quantum theory. Let me nevertheless first write down this title, on the non-extendibility. And I should remark that most of the work that I will present here has been done in collaboration with Roger Kolbeck. So yeah, right here's his name, so Roger Kolbeck. And my name is Renato Lindner. So Roger Kolbeck, I guess some of you know him. He has spent, I think, at least 2 years here at PI. So I will talk about kind of a sequence of work that I did with him. So I will at the end, if you're interested, give you a list of papers, some literature that covers the topics that I'm treating here. But mainly, the thing that I'm looking at is a very basic question. It's about what type of predictions quantum theory makes about measurement outcomes. So let's just consider a very simple, typical measurement we do in quantum theory. This is like, I draw here a Stern-Gerlach device. And we know that if we prepare the quantum state in a certain state, and let's call that phi, then depending on that state, it may be deviated in one of two directions. If, for example, we assume that this particle has two spin directions. So let's consider a particle, let's say spin one half particle, the simplest case, where we have just two possible deflections or two. So we have an outcome of the experiment, which is such that the particle may be deflected upwards or downwards. And let's just give these possible outcomes of the experiment some names. Here I say this is the outcome one. And if this detector here clicks, I call that the outcome minus one. So what does quantum theory allow us to do? So clearly, quantum theory allows us to compute the probabilities by which we can see these outcomes depending on how we prepare this spin particle here. So let me call this outcome here set. And then quantum theory allows us to compute the probability distribution of set conditioned on the preparation of this particle here. Now, now and in the future use this notation here, and just to maybe specify that all these letters, which are all capital letters, stand for random variables. So there are values that can in principle take a probability distribution. For example, I may randomly choose in which state I prepare a particle, and I will come back to that later. We'll usually think of pure states. So we will consider a situation where we prepare the particle in a pure state, but this pure state may be chosen according to some probability distribution. And in order to now give a specific value to a random variable, I will use small letters. So for example, I could here write that this phi takes a specific value small phi, and then I can write down the probability distribution. For example, I could now calculate the probability that Z gives one conditioned on this preparation here. And this will, of course, according to the, Born rule, if you assume that spin up particles are deflected upwards and spin down particle downwards, would, for example, give the value phi up here squared. So that's just to illustrate how I use this notation here. So that's what quantum theory allows us to do. Of course, it allows us to do much more, but in particular, if we want to make statements about measurement outcomes, we can calculate such probability distributions. Now, let's look at the specific example. Like, an example could be that the state phi is prepared in a state which I call phi bar, which would be equal superposition of up and down. And we know in this case, the outcome will be one half. So we know, of course, now in this case, if I do this phi bar, then we get one half here for this value. So with probability one half, the particle is deflected upwards. So this is a prediction that quantum theory makes. If I'm now in the future talking about predictions of quantum theory, I say here quantum theory allows us to make the prediction that this detector here will click with probability one half. But clearly, in this particular case, this prediction is not very informative in some way. So if you look at it from an information theoretic viewpoint, if you would make a random guess, not even knowing what the state here is, you would probably also make the correct prediction of the outcome with probability 1/2 by just choosing one of the two with probability 1/2. So one question, which will be a main question that I will ask in this talk, is whether we can hope that there could be a theory that somehow extends quantum theory and allows us to make better predictions. By better predictions, I mean predictions where, for example, we would be more likely to correctly say which outcome we would get before doing the experiment. So let me make an example for that. So I'm talking now about an extended theory. And this is just first an example. I will then later make that more general. So we could assume that there's a theory that involves additional parameters. So this extended theory may not only describe the state of a particle we prepare in terms of its usual quantum state, in terms of a wave function, but it may have an additional parameter. So there could be an additional parameter, which I call lambda. And just to be clear, so this lambda doesn't have to be something we associate to this actual particle. It could just be some additional parameter that is used in the theory that allows us to make better predictions. So now if we make a prediction by the theory, this prediction will not only be based on the quantum state of the particle, but in addition on the lambda. So prediction would be, in general, described by a probability distribution of the outcomes conditioned on the quantum state and this lambda here. So this is what I mean by now an extended theory. So of course, a theory could also involve much more than making predictions. It could describe how evolutions take place, but in particular, if we have some physical theory, it will somehow allow us to calculate the outcome or the probability of the outcomes of these experiments. And this will, at the end, result in a probability distribution of the outcomes conditioned on all parameters of the theory, where this is the parameter I anyway have in quantum theory, and these are the additional parameters. Now, first of all, it's not clear that such an extended theory is compatible with what we actually observe in quantum theory. And I will, therefore, First, give an example where we can make a prediction which is better than quantum theory, but still be compatible with quantum theory. So in this example, so this was supposed to be an example, let's say that lambda takes two values, which I could, for example, call up and down. But let's assume that this is not just simply telling us whether the particle will go to this upper detector or the lower one. Let's, for example, assume that this is just an example now of such a rule, that if we know that the quantum state is, for example, this quantum state phi bar, but in addition, we know that this lambda is, for example, up, then it may be that we could now predict the quantum state or the outcome with probability 3/4. So that's just an example of a possible rule that this additional theory or this extended theory may provide. And in addition, it may tell us that if instead this lambda parameter is down, and we are asking how likely is it that this upper detector clicks, then it's only 1/4. Okay, so clearly that's now a more informative prediction. So if we know this additional parameter, we are more likely to correctly tell which outcome we are going to expect. Nevertheless, such an improved predictions could be compatible with quantum theory. So in particular, my claim is that if the probability distribution of this parameter lambda conditioned on phi, so I have some, maybe I should write it like that. So if the state is phi, this parameter lambda may itself have a probability distribution. And if this parameter is equally likely up or down if we prepare a particle according to the state phi bar, then this does not contradict quantum theory in the sense that I will just explain. So what I write here is that this will be the probability distribution of this additional parameter if you do an experiment without knowing about this parameter. So let's assume we actually do this experiment now in the lab. We prepare this state according to this particular description here. And then if one would describe that in this extended theory, it would turn out that this additional parameter is equally likely takes the value up or down. In that case, of course, now if I now calculate prediction that I will make, so the prediction according to, let's say, maybe I call this just to make clear that so this would be kind of the additional rule. Let's call this rule E. This is this extra theory. Now, if I calculate the prediction that I can make without knowing this additional parameter, then I, of course, have to take the marginal distribution. So let's compute what is the prediction of set if I only know the quantum state. So I only know the quantum state is phi, but I apply now the rules that I defined here rather than the usual rule of quantum theory. So clearly what I have to do is to sum over all possible values of this additional parameter lambda. So I would actually use this rule here to compute the probability that lambda has a certain value conditioned on phi being that state. And then I take the prediction that the theory makes, which is given by a conditional distribution of the outcome based on the actual value of the parameter based on this additional lambda here. Okay, so what I'm saying, this is just the formula, the general formula for the outcome of set conditioned on a specific preparation if I ignore and therefore sum over this additional parameter lambda. So what does this give us in our case? So in this particular case, you easily see that if I now insert, I can now put any number. Let's say I calculate, for example, the probability of getting a 1. So I put here as an argument a 1. Then I also have to put as an argument here a 1. Then I get essentially the rule that this here is 1/2. So I get 1/2 times. And this is now depending on whether it's I'm in this situation or in this, 3/4 or 1/4. So I get 3/4 once. And in the second term of the sum, I get 1/2 times 1/4. So I get 1/2. And this is in agreement, of course, with the quantum prediction. So this is just an example telling you that I could make more informative predictions without being in disagreement with quantum theory. Yes?
A little clearer what the difference between capital lambda and phi bar is.
Okay.
I mean, I was thinking that, you know, capital lambda could just be a different selection of phi bar, for example. Would that comply with what you're saying here?
No, so what I'm assuming here is that I'm preparing, so if I describe this experiment in quantum theory, I would, in this particular, this is just an example here. The example of taking this particular state quantum mechanically. And now I'm saying lambda is an additional parameter, and this additional parameter could be something that happens that I don't, maybe I make an example from a different area. Let's assume this phi bar, so this phi bar is what we already know in quantum theory. This is how we usually describe this experiment if we prepare it in a certain state. Now the lambda is something that, some knowledge that may be around in an extended theory. So for example, to make now a different example, let's assume that instead we describe, for example, chemistry 100 years ago, we wouldn't know, or maybe 200 years ago, we wouldn't know that there are different isotopes of a C atom. So phi bar would tell us we take a C atom. The lambda would tell us which isotope it is. Now, if we do now an experiment and we know which isotope it is, then the outcome of the experiment may, of course, depend on the atom, on this, that it's a C atom, and on which isotope it depends on. So it would depend on this and that. But if I don't know which isotope I have, I essentially have to average over those. So now what I'm saying is that if you suddenly discover there are different isotopes, we don't want to make that the new theory that includes the fact that there are different isotopes is in contradiction to what we observed earlier. So what we did earlier was just when we took a C atom, we took one at random from the distribution of isotopes. And that's actually this distribution here. So this is essentially the distribution of this additional parameter if you don't know about it, if you just generate a particle, as we do now in quantum theory, according to that state. Then I would assume that in this extended theory, this would be described by a choice of this additional parameter. I don't know whether this clarifies the thing. This is just something we assume that is not under control in current quantum theory. According to current quantum theory, we don't see this parameter. We just think, let's assume it exists, and it's for each state we prepare, it has some distribution that we cannot control. It's just something we cannot control currently. Maybe in the future we find a way to control this thing.
Yes. You're assuming the variable is intrinsically classical, so there are no interferences between the
yes.
values.
Yes. I'm assuming that for the moment, I will at the end make some remarks about extensions of that. But for the moment, I assume that, and this is actually a restriction. But we can get rid of that. Thanks for this remark. So that's okay. Are there other questions related to that? Because maybe it's important that you ask questions now. Yes?
Is lambda non-local?
That's also a good question. I will come to that. So at the moment, I didn't make any assumptions about lambda, except that it's a classical value that I can describe as a random variable. But later, we will make some assumptions about lambda. Yes.
One example where you do have something like this in standard quantum theory is when you have pre and post selection. So you pre-select in your state psi, and then lambda could be a post-selected state, and then you would have rules that were like this.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
But I assume you're going to rule out sort of inference from the future.
I will rule out post-selection. You will see. So as I just mentioned, I will make some assumptions about lambda. But for the moment, this was just the general, let's say, framework. And then I will impose certain additional restrictions on it. Yes?
Just given what you've said so far, Bohmian mechanics seems to be an example of
yes.
this.
Yes,
with
true.
Lambda's
yes,
position
yes,
of
yes. Right. I was just going to now mention some
Sorry.
Examples.
Right.
But that's right. Bohmian mechanics is an example. The lambda would just be the position
right.
of the particle.
Right.
And then, of course, Bohmian mechanics, you know that if we ignore the position, would, of course, give us all the predictions that quantum theory makes. Okay. And so let me maybe make here a start and then say that I call, so a theory, now, okay, when I say a theory, of course, I know that the theory is more than just the rule to make predictions. But let me for the moment just reduce, like, I don't care that for the moment about the fact that the theory tells us more than making predictions. Let's just use the term theory for the moment for the rule that tells us how to actually predict the outcomes. That's what a theory should at the end at least do. So a theory of that form, set given, is called compatible with quantum theory. If this relation star here holds for some appropriately chosen distribution of this parameter lambda. So essentially, I just now wrote down more generally this is just a definition which is motivated by the example I gave before. Just saying, if this holds, then if the theory gives us the same predictions as quantum theory, if we ignore additional parameters, then I call it compatible with quantum theory. But the important thing here, which I should stress, is that this should be true now for all preparations of states and for all measurements. It shouldn't just apply to maybe one particular phi or so. So I mean, of course, this relation now for arbitrary phis. Maybe I should put here the bar. Okay. Now, once we have, okay, maybe let me now mention the examples. So one example is, of course, if lambda is just equal to phi. So this is just, again, quantum theory. And this is kind of a trivial example. This is just what we had before. So of course, I could say this additional parameter could just be the quantum state. So then it's trivial. I wouldn't actually introduce it. But this is just to stress that in this framework that I kind of introduced about extended theories, quantum theory is a special case. It's also included in all what I'm saying. This will become important, in particular when we compare this to work by
of two earlier work.
You're not allowing lambda to depend on the orientation of your strand error. You're allowing to depend on the preparation
I will also, I will also come to that, but we will see that lambda should, I mean, so, okay, let me maybe come back to that point later, because that will be actually a large part of the talk, how these dependences are organized. So this is an important point. But it will turn out that we will impose a restriction, which is that lambda should be determined beforehand. Because I want to talk about predictions. I didn't say that yet and what that means. I mean, here I don't even have any notion of time, what it means to be before or after. But once we have that, I will impose the restriction that lambda is available at the time I want to make a prediction. And of course, if I want to make a prediction, it has to be there before I do the measurement. And I also want it to be there before I choose what measurement to make. So this should be something about the preparation. So in some way, the idea would be I prepare the system. And then at the time when I prepare the system, the parameter lambda is defined. And then later, I could choose which measurement to make.
Asking because, I'm not an expert, but I think Bohmian mechanics, Bohmian mechanics, you actually have the dependency on the behavior of these other particles that are present in the theory, which may be the particles that conform the matter.
Yes, that's an important point, and that will be a reason why at the end, when I mean, at the end, I will come to a statement that quantum theory cannot be extended, why Bohmian mechanics will not be a contradiction to that. We'll come to that. Okay, thanks for that remark. So that's indeed, I mean, the timing when things or how they are independent, this will be an important aspect of all them. And I will come back to that in a minute. Then, of course, there are like these, let's say, hidden variable models. For example, by Bell or by Koshin and Specker. Or also, I mean, there's more recently, there's, for example, one by Leggett. So all these models have additional parameters in them. For example, the local hidden variables in Bell's model. I mean, in that case, of course, it's a restriction. Or some variables based on which you can make a prediction, so, and which are maybe non-local, as in Leggett's model. But they can always, I mean, so far, I didn't assume anything about lambda. I just said it's a random variable. So therefore, it's not a surprise that this is somehow included in this description. OK. But let me also mention that, and this is important. I mean, I never said it, but sometimes people get confused about that. So this random variable lambda here doesn't, of course, in general determine the outcome. In particular, in this example here, you see, this is, if it's equal to quantum theory, then, of course, the outcomes are still probabilistic conditioned on lambda. And also, that's why I gave this example here of 3/4 and 1/4. So this particular example gives improved predictions, but not deterministic predictions. So there is kind of a gap between improved predictions and making deterministic predictions. This is just important to notice, or to remark. Let me now come to, as I mentioned, Bell and so on. Briefly mention the relation to that work. And then I can at the same time say what exactly is the question we are asking. So it's kind of the relation to earlier work. So in some way, I mean, this is just a schematic. Let me here draw as a box the space of all theories. I don't know really how to define all theories, but again, mathematically, I just consider the prediction aspect of a theory. So mathematically, this would be the space of all ways how to assign such, how to define such conditional probability distributions. Now, of course, I can make certain restrictions. I can, for example, here look at theories that are local, or I could look at theories that are, for example, non-contextual. And of course, I can have different other I mean, I could impose arbitrary requirements that I like and define subsets. And now the question asked by, let's say, Bell and others. Let me write just the most maybe famous ones. is the following. Is quantum theory contained in a constrained set? And by constraint, I mean, for example, local set of series. And of course, the answer that is well known is that it's for certain sets like local series or non-contextual series, it's not. So quantum theory somehow lies here outside. That's in some way a schematic of the statement, type of statement. I mean, I'm not repeating what Bell said. I'm just saying the type of statement he makes is that we define a certain set of how a theory could be, certain properties, for example, that it could be local, and then he shows that quantum theory is not in this set, that it cannot be seen as a local theory in that sense. Now, what I want to ask is a different question. So this is not, in that sense, in competition with what Bell and Cauchy speculate. It's just a different question. It's a question of, let's assume here we look at a much larger set of theories. And I will define what that means. Let me just, for the moment, call it a set of reasonable or, let's say, natural theories. And I will later say what that should be. But of course, what I want to express with natural is that I want now to consider an as large set of theories as possible, which in particular should include quantum theory. Because, it's of course reasonable to assume that quantum theory is somehow natural. It's at least a theory that describes nature correctly. And the question we are now asking is a different one than the one here. So the question in this talk is somehow the question, is there any theory in the green set, abbreviated like that, in this set, that is more informative than quantum theory? And by more informative, I mean that it makes predictions which allow us to better to guess an outcome with higher probability. I will just make that more precise. But you see, this is kind of the difference. So here I wanted to write quantum theory. So here the question is quantum theory part of this set? And here we're asking if you consider this of such a localized or such a constrained set. And now we ask the question, let's now consider a much larger set of theories, which we don't want to constrain to be local or so. So this should now also refer to your question. So now I don't want to impose constraints on the series. Of course, we will still have some. This is indicated by this. And now ask, is there any theory in this set which gives us better predictions?
Did you write the question correctly?
Is there any theory in that is more than than quantum theory? I wanted to. Sorry, I was talking and writing at the same time, which was a bad idea. Thanks.
I take it another constraint though is what you called compatibility with quantum theory.
Yes, I will
the question.
Yes, so this is somehow in the more informal. I will now make the actual claim. This is now not the claim.
Good.
So it would not be correct somehow if I would include theories that are not compatible. This is just a question. Now let's give an answer to that question. This is now somehow a theorem, although I will now also for time constraint, not write it in a full mathematical way, but I hope I will be precise enough so that it's not ambiguous. Okay. Now what we consider is an extension of quantum theory. And so by an extension, I mean, again, such a rule that makes predictions. And let me here also be a little bit more precise, where I introduce here an additional parameter, which I call A, apart from the quantum state and lambda. And A would just be a description of the measurement setting. So this is Of course, if I calculate the prediction, this was implicit here, because here I just had a fixed measurement device. But in general, if I calculate the prediction in quantum theory, of course, this prediction will also depend on how I measure, what measurement I apply. They will call this A in the following. This is the quantum state, and this is the additional parameter. So let's consider such an extension of quantum theory. So far, what I mean by that is only that this is some rule of how to assign probabilities if I know these parameters and how I measure. And now I have some constraints. In particular, I have two constraints. If this extension is compatible with quantum theory, and this is already defined. This is what is written here on the right. And if this extension, and this I will define, this is not yet defined, is compatible with a notion of free choice, which I will define, then the predictions, and this is now important for the case of, so I only look at pure states, so, and I also only look at projective measurements. They are not more informative than quantum theory. And what does that mean mathematically? That means that I can just ignore the additional parameter. So it means that if I write down this probability distribution, set conditioned on A, phi, and lambda, then it gives me the same as if I drop lambda. So essentially, it just tells me the additional parameter is useless. There's no information contained in it if I want to calculate the outcome.
You mean summing over the values of lambda? What do you
mean? Yes, so, yes, that's right. So this would be defined, right, thanks for asking. I don't actually want to really write it down, but it would be defined in the same way as here, just with the roles of lambda and phi. Or actually, like there. It's just the sum over. I was too early. So it just means actually for any specific value. So, okay, maybe I should write it like that. I'm sorry, I gave a wrong
you
answer.
Specifying lambda doesn't do anything. It gives you,
yes, so for all lambda. Yes. So it just tells you for any particular lambda, the prediction you make is the same as if you don't include lambda. So this is just a quantum prediction. And maybe I should also mention here that this is equivalent. This could be written kind of as a Markov chain. So I could say if I want to make a prediction about set, then it's sufficient to know A, the measurement setting, and the quantum mechanical wave function, and the lambda is kind of unimportant. So this is just another notation for what I just said. Yes. Okay.
I'm confused. It sounds like the last condition is denying what you were saying about lambda when you first introduced it.
Yes. I mean, now it's a theorem. Now it's a, okay. Here, I have the theory.
Oh, I see.
Which doesn't, of course, comply with that. So for this is now an example where this is wrong.
Right, I see.
Now,
I
of course, see. What I'm going to argue about is that then this, okay, this is actually not, I cannot really test these things for that theory because I will say what that means. And to actually verify that, we need to define the outcomes for any possible measurement, not only for, here I only defined it for this particular choice of a state. But
right.
It's right, like this is now, this will be a more informative theory which will be excluded by this theorem.
I see.
So which assumption does it violate your point theory?
So as I said, it's actually not well, I would need to extend the theory. And if I would extend it, it would violate the second assumption, probably.
So
if,
why?
I mean, I don't find an extension which is compatible with two.
Which one does Bohmian mechanics violate?
I will come to that. Okay. There are two possible resolutions of Bohmian mechanics, but maybe before discussing that, I should define what I mean by that. Yes.
So given where you place quantum theory in your diagram over there, it seems that you've made an implicit assumption regarding the ontological nature of the quantum state. For instance, one could argue that you could put it inside the local box. I'm thinking of it as closest point of view. So the question is your theorem interpretation free?
The theorem is okay. Here, this was just meant as a schematic. Of course, here one may have different interpretations, but I'm just saying essentially, if I take quantum theory as this probability distribution, which is unambiguous, this is just, I'm here only talking about the probability distribution, this P and so on. And I can also talk about probability distribution that I can reach with local hidden variables. Then it's what Bell, for example, in Bell's result implies that this probability distribution implied by quantum theory is not one of these local ones. But of course, now the interpretation of what local and all that means, that I don't want to go into that. But for the theorem here, this is interpretation free. Once I've defined what I mean by this notion of free choice, of course. So of course, you may disagree that what I will define is what you call free choice. So in that sense, there is, of course, an interpretation in this name here of free choice. But otherwise, it's just a mathematical theorem. It's just saying that, this is mathematically defined as summing, as by this simple formula here. And I think this is also well defined without any interpretation. It's only about the predictions. You don't need to know whether anything is real or not real. And so.
Okay, I agree with everything you said, except the fact that, you could put quantum theory in the local box and be on the subjective Bayesian interpretation of those probability distributions, but that's.
Yeah. Okay. Let's maybe discuss that later. Maybe I should also say I made, of course, some implicit assumptions as well. Namely, for example, that I can actually, which was pointed out, describe these additional extensions as classical values, which is actually a very limiting assumption. And this claim can be extended, and I will, if I have time, talk a bit about these extensions. Okay. Are there other questions? Because if not, then I have to. Maybe now go into that point, because that's, as you can see from this theorem, all the thing comes from here, the whole strength. So this is actually quite a restrictive thing. It will, the whole power of the thing comes from there. This is more, maybe also the most disputed one. That's why I deferred it to the last part of the thing. So let me now go into this freedom of choice assumption. And I hope at least to make clear what this is also a very, very well defined mathematical assumption. Of course, one may discuss of whether it captures what one would naturally call free choice, but that's something we can discuss, of course. But let me first just give you the mathematics. So the freedom of, or maybe at the very beginning, I have to give some intuition. So freedom of choice means that if I have an experiment, and now I come to this question about the timing. So naturally, what we do is we somehow prepare. So let's redraw this experiment. I prepare a quantum state. Then at some point, I measure it. And I can choose here a measurement. So this would be the choice of measurement. And here would be the choice of the state. And if I want, in an experiment, I can arrange it in such a way that I first choose the state, I prepare the state, and later I choose how to measure. I don't say that it has to be like that, but I can do an experiment in that order. And at the end, I get an outcome. I called it Z. This will be the outcome. And now, let's first do some intuitive things. So when would we call A to be a free choice? So let's now talk about this. When is this free? It's clearly, we want that we can make this choice of what to measure independently of the state that has been prepared. Of course, if someone prepares the state, someone else than me, and I'm now constrained to certain measurements, I can only measure in the Norton or, let's say, in the computational basis, then I would be unhappy. So a minimum requirement, this is not just the intuition, is that somehow the probability if I want, I can choose the probability distribution A such that it's independent of the state. So somehow like that. So by that, I mean, as before, that whatever phi is, I can choose an A independently of it. This is now, maybe I should stress that point here. I'm now not talking about my real ability to generate randomness and so on. This is just about the theory. I mean, a theory gives some probability distribution, and what if I write here later, or if I will explain what compatible means, I don't mean that it can in reality make random, generate random bits, because that could be hard in the lab. I just mean in principle the theory doesn't forbid to make such choices. There is no inconsistency in the theory if I assume that I had certain random bits to make the choice. So for example, in classical mechanics, I clearly don't have any random bit. There's no inherent randomness. Nevertheless, the theory allows me to freely choose from which altitude I drop this chalk, for example, this piece of chalk, which would mean that I could, in principle, imagine to make calculations where I randomly choose the altitude of this and then drop it. So what I want to stress with that is that the randomness that which I actually now use to choose this altitude doesn't need to be part of the theory. I'm only talking about the possibility of using the theory if I had some source of randomness, and it shouldn't lead to inconsistencies. So this should be possible. And clearly, this is possible in quantum theory. I can make calculations for any A. But there could be another requirement. But this, I could also say, OK, if it's free, it should be independent of everything else. So shouldn't it also be independent of set? But this makes no sense, because, of course, if I choose a measurement, then it will influence my outcomes. I mean, that's what we expect. So this is not something I want to demand. So now the question is, how can I actually formulate a freedom of choice assumption by independence assumptions? Because I would like to have such independence assumptions. But obviously, as I just explained, this choice should be independent of certain things, but not of others. But this diagram actually illustrates already what I probably want to have. I want to be independent of things that pre-existed. So if I make this choice here, I care about not being correlated to things that have been chosen before. But I don't care, of course, that if I make the choice, this will be correlated to the outcome. And therefore, I need, if I just abstractly here, which I do so far, introduce, I mean, so far we were talking about random variables. We just had random variables on the level of the theorem. So, like, the theorem doesn't talk about any, let's say, time or ordering. So I need to introduce something more. Yes?
You also want P of phi given A. In other words, that both the incoming state and the measurement be independent of each other.
Yes. So if I wanted to argue that, if I want to freely choose the state, I would maybe, for example, want to have an additional restriction. Now, as in the example, I just wanted to talk about A, but you're right. Of course, I may want to have add other constraints. Yes?
What about lambda?
Yeah.
Okay, that will just come then. Yes?
Is the freedom of choice assumption equivalent or independent of the assumption of causality?
Okay, now actually I didn't so far define freedom of choice. I just kind of wanted to give a motivation. Let me maybe first write down the definition. What I'm saying so far is that we just had one random variables, and based on random variables, I cannot define freedom of choice without introducing anything addition in the way I want, because I cannot just put such a requirement, because I need to decide whether a given, so if I want to argue that A is free, I somehow need to now have a criterion for the random variables for which it should be independent. Maybe if you could just wait with the question for 5 minutes, then it should maybe be clearer. So in some way, at the moment, I'm in a kind of slightly bad situation, because I have, let's say, certain random variables. And let me just draw the set of random variables. I have some choices I make, some outcomes. Maybe I could have some other choices B, some other outcomes. And also, I have this quantum state, which has been chosen, this phi. And also have the lambda at some point. And now what I propose is to introduce, and this is just, I mean, that's what we impose. We just introduce some chronological order. So the idea is introduce a chronology, which I implicitly already did, for example, here, or when talking about this measurement. And mathematically, a chronology would just be a partial order on the set of random variables. So mathematically, it's just a partial order. So I'm essentially saying which things are done before the other. So if I do an experiment, for example, the one there, I would say I could arrange it if I want in such a way that I choose this first and then that. So in that case, I would, for example, impose this order like from here to here. So this arrow would kind of indicate order. And of course, I'd make the choice of how to measure before I receive the outcome. And maybe I have another experiment where I make another choice and get an outcome Y. And also, I may want to, for example, make a prediction. So I want to make, to have this parameter lambda before I make, for example, the other choices. That's just a possible order. And I'm not saying that this is necessarily the one we want to use, but that's just, if I have a given experimental setting like this one there, then I could naturally draw such an order. I would, for example, in that case, say phi is before, let's say, z. That would be something I would impose. Now I can, so now, from now on, assume that we have a certain order, and now I can define free choice. Maybe put in here. Now it give the actual definition. So consider a set of random variables with a course, with a chronology. So by this chronology, I just mean a set of arrows or a partial order mathematically. I mean, now a random variable, maybe I call this set here gamma. A random variable, let me write it out. Random variable A of this set. So if I take now one, is now called free if it's statistically independent of a subset of random variables, which I call gamma A. By statistically independent, I mean that this is, it's a product distribution where gamma A, and this is now the important point, is just a set of all random variables in this set gamma, which have the property that they are not after A. So if I have A, so it's in some way saying that these is the random variables that don't in chronology lie after I made the choice. So I made this choice, I make the choice A, and I want to be independent of the things which are not, so to speak, in its future. So that's now compatible with this motivation. So this criterion, if I take this as the partial order, would, for example, indeed require that I'm independent of phi, because phi was before, but it wouldn't require that I'm independent of set, because set was later. Now it's all, yes?
When you wrote the first line there, yes, the motivation was that you want that the experiment that can choose is set independent on the initial,
yes,
state.
Yes.
But don't you think that this condition basically say that the experimenter must choose the set independent?
Yes, so that's
state?
A good question. So I wanted, with this remark here that I made about the randomness in classical mechanics, stress that it's only about the possibility of choosing. So here, this whole statement is about a theory. So I'm not making a statement about our ability to choose freely. So I really want to stress that point. So this never makes, so in this assumption, this free choice, there's never an assumption that we actually have randomness in the lab. It's only about theories, and theories are just described in terms of conditional distributions. Now what I'm saying that is that if I'm, or what I'm going to say is that if I now make, if I now can choose A in such a way that it's independent of pre-existing events, and this doesn't contradict my rule of the theory, then I'm fine. So it's only about the possibility of choosing and not violating the theory. Does this answer it?
Yes, yeah. I mean, I have just a feeling that if the experimenter wants to correlate,
yes,
because he has,
yes,
free will, to
then he can. Yes, sure. Yes, yes.
And
it's only
case,
if he,
this condition,
yeah,
will be violated.
Yes. So essentially, it's like, assume you're a theorist, then you want to say you want to calculate what happens if you were able, if what happens if you choose the measurement at random. Now, as a theorist, you don't care whether you can actually you have a random number generator, but you can just do the calculation, and the calculation should now not run into a contradiction with the theory. But it's, of course, it's all about, like, as a theorist, you say, what happens if you choose at random? You don't forbid the experimentalist to actually be correlated, or maybe he's always correlated and doesn't notice, and so on. So that's not part of the theorem. The theorem just says, or the assumption here will just require that there's no inconsistency with the theory, like classical mechanics. That's why I brought this example. Classical mechanics clearly doesn't have any randomness. Nevertheless, it doesn't, if we choose things at random and now make calculations, we don't run into a contradiction, I hope.
Who chooses the chronology?
Yes, that's now the point. So this will now be with respect to a specific chronology.
But what did you choose?
That one that I choose. Or, I mean, it's a relatively general one, but it's not, it doesn't work for all chronologies. Okay, so, but let me, okay, maybe I have 5 minutes left. Or, so let me first make an important remark, because there is often discussion about a possible alternative definition of free choice. So let me stress that this order that I defined doesn't need to be a full order. For example, in this example I gave here, I deliberately didn't draw an arrow between A and Y. So it's not a full order in the sense that it doesn't mean that if there's no arrow from A to Y, there should be one from Y to A. So there may be no arrows between certain random variables. And this, of course, now means that I have, in principle, an alternative definition, which I could define this set here from which I want to be independent in a different way. I could say, let's define it as all random variables which are in the past of A. That's a different definition. Let me maybe illustrate why it's different. So it's different because of, let's consider the following setting. Let's assume we have two measurements we do, one with choice A and outcome X, and the other one with choice B and outcome Y. This is a Bell-type setup, and let's assume we chose the quantum state before, and also the lambda would be chosen before. So we have this chronological order here. Maybe they are somehow together. Now, clearly, according to the first definition here, if we choose A freely, A has to be independent of all that. So that's the set gamma A. Whereas if I took the second definition, A would only have to be independent of this. So this would be the set gamma bar. And now you could say, why don't I actually use this as a definition? It looks kind of less restrictive. Why do I require that the free choice should be independent of everything here? Now, the answer is that this would, I mean, it's just a definition, so it cannot lead to a contradiction, but it would clearly contradict our intuitive understanding of a free choice. Because let's also here draw, I mean, this would at the same time be the set gamma B bar. So let's now, an example could now be that A and B are perfectly correlated. So let's say these are two parties, Alice and Bob, and they both make a choice, but they are perfectly correlated, their choices. Now, clearly, our intuitive understanding would say at least one of them wasn't free. Maybe each one thinks it's free, but if two persons make the free choice, it would be strange to assign to both of them the attribute of having been free. We don't maybe know which one was first and so on, but OK, we don't want to assign freedom to both. But with that alternative definition, so according to alternative, they may both be free, which we don't want. So that's why, this is just a reason why I define it with this definition and not with that one. Of course, according to this definition, they would just not be free because A is not independent of B in this example.
But free clearly also allows you to correlate. I mean, if I say A and B are free, I can choose that I make B strongly correlate about A.
Yes, sure. So, I mean, here I'm not saying free means, I mean, this is just try to emphasize, it's just the ability, if I want it to make it independent, then I can. So if, of course, you can choose to make the same choice as another one. But the point is that if you want, if you are asked to make, or if you decide to make something independent of what has been there, let's say you carry out an experiment that you want, then you should in principle be able to do that. So you should be allowed to do something which is not correlated.
But what you want is, if it's possible to have that,
per,
for free variable, yes, it's possible.
Yes, it's possible to choose it like that. Now that's okay, so far I've just given,
yeah,
actually.
I could set up my experiment with random.
A definition. Yes.
Random
yes.
choices of things that
yes.
A, maybe
I should,
at A and
yes.
B, whether independent or
yes.
things, but I don't have to.
Maybe to now actually answer your question, let me now say, this is now just a definition of what free means. I didn't actually define what it means here in this theorem. Let me just end with that because I wanted to say much more, but. Maybe I should at least make this theorem clear. Now, what does it mean here that I'm compatible with the notion of free choice? And this was just as, of course, so what I mean is that if, so this means that the theory should, so we have, so first of all, so it's, it is, or maybe I should write it like that. I should just summarize it because I don't have enough time. So for this assumption here, let me call it like that. So clearly without, I need to specify chronology. That's clear from my definition. Now, this should be with, so it is possible, so what it means is it's possible to choose the overall distribution. So here I just gave conditional distributions. So you see, a theory just describes a conditional distribution. But what I'm saying is that I could, of course, now choose an overall distribution, and I could also choose one in an extended setting. Let's say one like here, when I have, where I have A, B, and so on, and Z, and X, and Y. So like that, and there's also phi and lambda. So it should be possible to choose such a total distribution where all, so this just specifies all random variables, such that they are this such that it is its conditional distribution is the one defined by the theory. So clearly, if I now just specify the distribution of all random variables, I still want to be compatible with the theory distribution. But if I apply a theory as the theory is at the end, I have all random variables are at the end defined in the sense that I have a joint probability distribution. So once I do the calculation with all the choices and everything put in, I get a joint probability distribution of everything. Now what I require is that this joint probability distribution is of course still in agreement with the theory, so that if I calculate what is now the probability distribution, for example, of set conditioned on these things, I should get the things that are described by the theory. But in addition, this joint probability distribution should have the property that, for example, A was independent, for example, of X and the others, according to this free choice assumption. So I want to, at the end, have a setting. A setting is just a set of random variables with a well-defined probability distribution in such a way that the setting is in agreement with the theory, and at the same time in agreement with free choice. So I have these requirements. So that's what is meant by this assumption. And so this assumption should now extend. So what I also didn't write, but it's maybe clear from this, is that it should extend to settings where I do more than one measurement. That's why I wrote here chronology like that. So this is one where I have not only one measurement, but two. So the theorem can only be proved because I somehow embed, let's say I'm interested in predictions of this measurement here, I embed it into a larger setting. And then it should still be compatible with free choice. Yes?
I see that we're almost out of time, so maybe this will be a question that has to be extended
yes,
until
maybe.
After. But I it would be easier for me to understand what's going on here if I could see how it works out in a concrete case that mm-hmm. I think I understand. So mm-hmm. I take it Bohmian mechanics, for example, mm-hmm. is gonna somehow violate
yes.
this condition of freedom. Mm-hmm. Is there a simple mm-hmm. way to explain how that works?
Yes. let me now, maybe as a lot, if I have time, 1 minute for a remark about how it relates to Bohmian mechanics, because that's indeed important, maybe, to clarify that.
Right. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So first I should say this is not the theorem that somehow is against Bohmian mechanics. I mean, sometimes people that do Bohmian mechanics get very annoyed when they see this theorem, so that's not the purpose. So this is just...
I'm not annoyed, I'm just curious.
No, yes, sure. No, just... But let me... Okay, what happens if you do Bohmian mechanics? There are two kind of ways or reasons why, different reasons why Bohmian mechanics is not a counterexample to this theorem, because that one may think. Bohmian mechanics gives clearly better predictions. It actually makes deterministic predictions. So one would say this conclusion is wrong. So it has to violate one of those.
Right.
So there are two possibilities. One is, and I think this is not, I mean, the majority of people don't agree with that one, but one is that this hidden parameter in Bohmian mechanics, this position here, this would be lambda, is something that is accessible. So that's now one variant. Most disagree with that, but they say it's something that is accessible. And in that case, if it's accessible, we should indeed, we can make better predictions. But if it's accessible, then we also have to include it here in the definition of, like, when we talk about compatibility with free choice. Now, in Bohmian mechanics, because you include this lambda in this chronological structure here, there is also lambda. So if you make a choice A, it should be independent of lambda, and at the same time also of B and Y. So in Bohmian mechanics, you don't have this chronology. In Bohmian mechanics, in Bohmian mechanics, you want to have an arrow from here to here, and also an arrow from here to here. And as soon as you include this arrow, the theorem does no longer hold. So in some way, what Bohmian mechanics says is that you have why didn't I draw such arrows? Because usually if you do experiments, for example, space-like separated, then we don't have this causal structure.
I'm not sure I understand all the details of this yet, and I'll have to ask you later. But it seems like one of the two following things ought to be true. Either this theorem shows that a theory like Bohmian mechanics is incompatible with certain features of a theory that we want, what you're calling naturalness or something like that. Or it shows that your criteria of naturalness or freedom aren't the interesting ones.
Okay, yes. So
one of those two things must be true.
Okay, so whether it's interesting or not is, of course, not up to me to decide. But I have here explicitly referred to a chronology. Now, if you allow only chronologies where everything happens at the same time, so which is not compatible with relativity theory in some way, then the theorem can be avoided. So if, as long as the chronology is compatible with relativity theory,
you're saying that the non-locality of Bohmian mechanics messes up the possibility of the kind of chronology that you want.
Yes, okay, that was just one variant. The other variant, which most people maybe, or more people agree in my experience when I discuss with them, is that they say, oh, in Bohmian mechanics, we never said that this additional parameter lambda is actually accessible. It's just not accessible. So if it's not accessible, we cannot make better predictions. And therefore, the problem is avoided.
You mean accessible? So the question is whether the additional parameter actually practically allows us to make better predictions.
Yes, so they just...
Right.
Yes, so that's what you can say. So if you say it's not accessible, then what does it mean mathematically? It means, of course, that you would say, okay, for better predictions, we don't include it in the theorem. We just don't include it here. And then if we don't include it here, the statement is trivial. But if you don't include it here, we, of course, also don't include it in our free choice. Because, of course, if you make a choice and this choice is correlated to a hidden variable that is not accessible, then we may not care. We would say it's still free. So we don't have to include it here. So you can have these two options. Either you don't include the parameter here and also not here, or you include it in both. And in the...
I'm confused. Accessibility, lambda being accessible was never an explicit...
Yes.
It didn't come up
right.
Until now.
Right. Yes, right. That's correct.
Right. So I think that's a red herring. All because... as you pointed out, the Bohm theory is an example of this framework. Whether or not we can, the theory gives us, conditional on a certain position, a well-defined probability of outcome, and then a probability distribution over the position. Whether or not we can know that.
And it seems to me that actually the work is really being done by the chronology. And
right.
it's actually mm-hmm. what you've written there is not a theorem. There's another premise there.
Mm-hmm.
Compatible with the notion of free choice with respect to the chronology that
yes,
you wrote.
Yes, but that's
the
written.
Board, right?
That's,
because
yes.
the Bohm theory, yeah, the Bohm theory requires a distinguished notion
mm-hmm.
of this
mm-hmm.
is how
yes.
they be even right now.
Right.
Right?
Okay. Yes.
And so the Bohm theory actually, I think, satisfies free choice
mm-hmm.
with
right.
respect to
yes.
that chronology.
Exactly
yes.
Right.
Yes.
Right? But,
yeah.
but not with respect to
yes.
a relativistic
yes. yes.
chronology in which those
yes.
green errors aren't there.
Okay.
So I think the theorem needs to be compatible with quantum theory, compatible with
respect
with,
to this
with
chronology, yes.
To a, chrono-
yes.
A chronology
mm-hmm.
without those green arrows.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I absolutely agree. I mean, you're just stressing this
yes,
thing here.
I think that's exactly
yeah.
right.
And that's, okay, it's here on the right
yeah.
bottom, so it's maybe not so visible, but it's important. I perfectly agree.
Yeah.
I don't. Yes, but okay, this was just a summary. But I would argue that this is. Still natural. So, okay, there are two points. One is clearly
you.
On the mathematical level, and that I have to stress, we need a chronology like the one without the green arrows. There's no, okay, I don't want to suggest that there's anything else.
Okay.
I would argue that, of course, that's a natural chronology, as long as we want to be compatible with relativity theory. So in some way you could say, I mean, I don't know how to define the chronology in a different way, actually.
What have you done that's different from Bell's theorem? I mean, because you could read Bell's theorem the same way, you can't have that chronology.
Right, exactly.
So what is it that you've done uh-huh. that goes beyond Bell's
what?
Theorem?
Okay, I hope to kind of stress that with this thing here, with this set. So we look at the different set. So our set of theories includes, for example, quantum theory. Which is not by Bell's. So, I mean,
yes,
I never
yes.
make a locality assumption. You could, of course, say this chronology looks like a locality, but it's certainly not a locality assumption because, in particular, even if I drop these arrows, quantum theory is still compatible with that. So, okay, the big difference is really what Bell does is to look at a set of series where he has some constraints like locality that exclude quantum theory of being one of these series. Whereas what we do is only a free choice assumption, which is a much larger set. In particular, it includes quantum theory. So quantum theory is compatible with free choice assumption.
Wait.
I don't know whether this answers your question.
Maybe. I'm not thinking
so it's really a different. So the set is much larger. It's not constrained by locality. That's the answer, essentially. Although you may say, I mean, and that's correct, you may say in the definition of chronology,
mm-hmm.
there is an intuition behind which is by the relativity theory. So you may say this is like introducing locality. But on a formal level, it's a completely different thing.
But
in particular, it doesn't exclude quantum
maybe
theory.
Maybe it's the case that if you choose that chronology without the
mm-hmm.
green arrows,
mm-hmm.
and you try to extend it, you're not going to do that in any situation where you violate Bell's theorem,
mm-hmm.
it seems like what's going to be doing the work is non-locality
mm-hmm.
rather than sort of any notion of free will. It seems that that's what's driving this.
I mean, I don't know what you mean by what's doing the work is non-locality.
It's Bell's theorem. It's the feature of quantum theory that it's non-local.
I mean, it's certainly the feature of quantum theory of being non-local is crucial for the proof. Yes, I perfectly agree with that. But I want to stress that the type of statement is a different one. So we have not a notion of locality which is as strong as if Bell and, for example, excludes quantum theory. So we have a set of theories which can be non-local, like quantum theory. And still, in this set, there's no theory that makes better predictions than quantum theory.
If you choose that chronology, the one without
yes.
the green arrows, and you have your definitions,
mm-hmm.
is it possible to prove Bell's, or the usual statements that you use to derive Bell's inequalities? So, for example,
yes.
that the probability is independent of the choice on the other side.
So you're asking if I have this chronology, whether I can derive.
Maybe you can derive the usual sort of conditions on probability that you use to derive Bell's theorem.
Yes.
Can I derive the fact that the probability here is independent of the choice over here?
What I can get is something that, the choice, I mean, this is follows, of course, from the chronology that the choice here is independent of these two things.
So that's the same statement that Bell uses.
That's,
or
Bell has, of course, a stronger, because otherwise he couldn't exclude quantum.
But other people use probabilistic statements.
What I'm saying is that however you formulate Bell's assumptions, they exclude quantum theory. So quantum theory is not included in, however you formulate Bell's constraints, even if you are general and formulate them in a probabilistic way, they exclude quantum theory. Whereas this constraint here doesn't exclude quantum theory. So it's clearly different. So this is just, should be, let's say, convincing proof that this is just not just a reformulation of locality.
What is this? PR boxes allowed in this? In
this general frame? A PR box, that's a very good question. So a PR box is allowed except for the fact that we need to have this true for all possible measurements we can do quantum mechanically. And the PR box simply doesn't tell us what happens if you do a measurement somehow. I mean, it's not an extension of quantum theory. It's just a part of quantum theory that is somehow extended. And so what the theorem implies is that PR boxes actually cannot be consistently extended to model quantum theory. That's one implication of the theory.
Excuse me, question, because we're kind of running out of time. I want to get to Bill's.
But maybe I still didn't answer your question, because you said there's no notion of of accessibility. And that's absolutely correct. In the theorem, I never talk about the randomizer being accessible or not. So what I meant when I gave this answer is only that you have to essentially decide whether you want to consider, for example, if you do Bohmian mechanics, you have to decide whether you consider lambda as whether you want to consider the position of the particles as lambda or not. If you want to have this interpretation of predictability, of course, then it only makes sense if you include it. But this is just about the interpretation. Of course, the theorem never talks about, there's no notion of accessibility.
There's supposed to be a mathematically clear set of criteria from which you can prove a theorem.
Yes, which is
this. If this set of criteria is mathematically clear, it ought to be that you shouldn't need to do any interpretation
What I'm saying is you can now either say Bohmian mechanics. So you have to say, what is lambda? That you have to say. This is not part of the theorem. And what I'm saying is that some Bohmian mechanics would say lambda is not the position. That's what I'm saying. So there is
I don't understand. But
most say that.
Suppose we say it's the position of the particle.
Okay, if it says that. Yeah. Okay, if you decide on one variant. So I'm just saying there are these two options of how to apply the theorem. The theorem is, I would say, mathematically clear, but you have to say what is lambda. So if you now decide lambda is the position, then Bohmian mechanics contradicts the freedom of choice assumption with respect to this chronology.
I see.
Because, and you could save it by introducing the green arrows, in which case the theorem would no longer apply.
But then somebody who advocates Bohmian mechanics would have the right to say, so what? Bohmian mechanics itself, like Wayne said, defines a chronology, with respect to which what you want to
or maybe I talk to a different subset of Bohmian mechanics, but most of them are unhappy with that because they still want to be compatible with relativity theory. So the chronology should be,
I don't know any advocate of Bohmian mechanics who denies that you need to choose a preferred frame. You can prove
choose a preferred frame.
The identity of the preferred frame can't be detected by any experiment.
Yes, you could still choose a preferred frame, but the point is the free choice should still hold with respect to, let's say, the theory per se. I mean, this is actually an operation. So the free choice assumption is operationally testable. This is not like under, so in principle, you could verify the correlations. And if you see them, you have no free choice.
Okay. I think there's a confusion here, but we'll continue.
Okay.
We'll refer this to later. Richard, you have a very small question.
Yes?
When you stated the chronology, there was no lead question. And yet, when you wrote down here, positive Q for sort of.
Oh, sorry. I should have. Yes, this is. Okay, this is. Yeah, sorry. I wanted to. This should be C. Sorry. Yes, this was just.
So we don't need the X then.
Yes, this was just that.
Thank you.
Yes, sorry.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.